Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. So the power outages continue across the state. The governor and lawmakers are dealing with the intense reaction to that. And it's the end of the legislative session. So hundreds of bills are either being signed or vetoed. There's a lot to talk about in this week's Capital Chat. CAP Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler is with me. Hi, Ben. And
hey.
How about how all this is playing for Governor Newsom?
Oh, it is of all the weeks for a governor to have to deal with. It's not technically, I guess, a state of emergency, but it's certainly one that the full force of the California's executive branch must be activated. This is probably not the first week that Newsom would have picked. He has until midnight Sunday to sign what began this week as probably, I think, 400 or 500 bills, now down to a little under 300. He's got a lot of work.
So every time he's in a public situation right now, he's not only asked about the legislation, but he's being asked about PG&E, the power outages. So for him, it's kind of coming in all directions.
Yes, for sure. And so he is holding these signing ceremonies throughout the state, and he's getting questions on the blackouts, even in San Diego yesterday, where, as you mentioned, you know, they do have an investor-owned utility. They are looking at a very limited number of blackouts. I had heard about 29,000 yesterday, customer accounts. So you roughly triple that. You get a little under 100,000 people down there who might be affected. But there were still questions down there. And of course, in Los Angeles, where Southern California Edison was considering 200,000 or so customer account blackouts. So roughly three times that would make it about 600,000. Not nearly as many as the well over 2 million potentially here with PG&E, yet still significant. And he really did have to face a walk a tightrope trying to balance both criticism for PG&E and, as we'll hear right now, acknowledging that he understands the reasons for these blackouts.
I don't think they're making a mistake as it relates to proactive measures to mitigate the prospect of fires. I think that's the right decision.
And yet, the obligatory criticism.
They're in bankruptcy because of their terrible management going back decades. They've created these conditions.
And I should be clear, he's referring specifically to PG&E, not to Southern California Edison or San Diego Gas and Electric. In fact, he compared PG&E very unfavorably to San Diego Gas and Electric because SDG&E is widely recognized as responding well to the massive fires in the San Diego area more than a decade ago and really instituting systems to help mitigate and prevent fires, which a lot of policymakers really want PG&E to do and think they should have already done.
I'm sure he's choosing words carefully to walk, as you say, that line between this being a public safety issue and then having the public utility in bankruptcy when there has been some admitted culpability. What are lawmakers, meanwhile, saying? Because sometimes they feel a lot freer to be more voracious with their descriptions and their opinions.
Well, sure. It's easy for one of 120 to be populist and represent your angry constituents. That's, in many ways, your job is to reflect their feelings and also advocate for them and agitate for them. But we're starting to see, I think, PG&E basically use up what little goodwill it may have left at the state capitol. It already wasn't able to get a bill that it wanted to help it exit bankruptcy through the legislature in the final weeks of session just because there was so much PG&E fatigue and anger after legislation over the summer that set up some taxpayer help, not necessarily as a bailout, but some taxpayer help to help PG&E and other utilities if there are some of these really big wildfires that maybe electric equipment was involved in, but it wasn't, you know, there wasn't specific negligence or liability. But I want to read you a little quote from State Senator Jim Nielsen, who represents Paradise. And he's a Republican, longtime lawmaker, not necessarily prone to bombastic rhetoric. But what he said is the legislature must rigorously examine whether PG&E is capable of responsibly delivering reliable, safe electricity to its rate-paying customers. I did follow up with his office and ask, well, hey, does this mean that he's looking at a breakup of PG&E? And I was told he's not there yet.
But what he is saying is don't look just at this immediate power shutoff. He's saying look at the big picture and the role that PG&E has overall in supplying power to the state.
And yet that while it does all of that, it was such a, I mean, I used a metaphor in a story I filed yesterday, a sledgehammer approach versus scalpel approach. Southern California Edison told me that they are making decisions on whether to shut down electricity in their coverage area circuit by circuit, not area or region, but circuit by circuit. Some circuits serve as few as 50 people. So if Southern California Edison is able to do that, and yet PG&E is just saying, okay, these whole big swaths are getting shut down, that shows a difference between the two utilities. Some sophistication, maybe better. You know, it's certainly true that PG&E has a much larger area affected than Southern California Edison. But you still look at those side by side. And, you know, so I got on the phone with a Stanford professor yesterday, Michael Wara, he's an expert in all of this. And I asked him a question that I think is on a lot of people's minds. PG&E is essentially saying, look, either we shut down power to 2 million plus people or we don't, and there's a significant risk of a wildfire. Isn't there anything in between, any sort of an alternative? Is PG&E setting up a false choice? And here's what Michael Wara of Stanford said.
I think it actually isn't a false choice. The weather forecast suggests very dangerous fire conditions, the kind that ignited the 2017 Napa and Sonoma wildfires over large parts of the state. And unfortunately, the utilities haven't had enough time to make the changes to their systems that they would need to in order to run them through that kind of a dangerous fire weather event and do it safely for their customers.
What all this is pointing us to is the decision that's going to be made in hindsight, looking at how the situation is handled now for how it might or will be handled next time. And I guess that's the next debate.
Yeah. And I mean, I also heard, you know, I got a listener email this morning who pointed out, look, I mean, PG&E is darned if it does, darned if it doesn't, right? It's going to get slammed if it does nothing and there's a big wildfire. In fact, it was considering one of these public safety power shutoffs in the Paradise area last year, on the very morning that the campfire began.
Right.
They did not act. This fire began. We know what happened. Now it's seeing very challenging weather conditions, and it's saying, well, we really want to make sure that that doesn't happen again. So we're going to shut off power for days to more than 2 million Californians. So, I mean, you might wonder, is there something in between? And what Michael Wara is saying is, at least right now, and he went on in an interview that we ran on Morning Edition that we'll put up online if you missed it at capradio.org. He went on to say, look, I mean, you know, they do need to get better at their systems. There ought to be eventually a better way of doing this, something more targeted, but they're not there yet. They are playing catch up to utilities like San Diego Gas and Electric.
You are listening to Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler, and we have called this a balancing act week for the governor. He also has these hundreds of bills to sign or veto. He's not a long-term experienced governor, so this is a new process for him. There's a pending deadline. Let's talk about a big school bond measure that he has signed and the context of it.
So you, if you live in California and are a registered voter, are going to vote on a $15 billion with a B, $15 billion school bond on the March 2020 ballot. Here's your PSA of the week. The primary is in March this year. It's not in June. That's when you vote for Democratic presidential primary, or if you're Republican, vote for President Trump. And there will be at least one ballot measure, and it is this $15 billion school bond. It is for modernization and construction of facilities at schools of all age levels, starting with preschool, running through K-12, through community colleges, all the way up to the UC and CSU system. What is noteworthy for Newsom signing this is it is a break from his predecessor. Former Governor Jerry Brown really tried to limit bonds placed on the ballot. He blocked for a couple of years a school bond until in 2016 outside groups, both school groups and construction groups, which would benefit from this, said, you know, we're done with this. They gathered signatures, put it on the ballot. Jerry Brown scorned it as a blunderbuss effort, and voters approved it anyway. Brown did manage to limit the size of bonds on housing and on parks and water last year. That was 2018. And they both passed, but he did manage to keep the sizes down. He's out of office, and all of a sudden you've got another school bond, This is, you know, 3 years since the 2016 bond passed. Backers say that money's already gone. There is a big need. And so they got together and everyone wrote a $15 billion school bond. So that is, I think, just worth highlighting, not just because it's a ballot measure, but it's a big change in policy. And Brown even warned in an interview that ran on Insight here a couple of weeks ago, look, bond and pension debt need to be paid come hell or high water. And so if and when there's a recession, the bonds sound good in theory financially right now, $15 billion for school facilities, and a lot of it's really needed, but the money's going to have to get paid, and it's going to run into other costs that the state has during the recession, other programs that might need to be cut.
Because this is a ballot measure, we will get much more into the details of what was signed between now and March. I do want to hit one other, which was the rent cap. You just mentioned housing and homelessness. So rent cap is a measure that's aimed at dealing with the state's crisis.
Capping rent increases at 5% plus inflation, protecting tenants from evictions without just cause, and blocking landlords from raising rents right before the cap takes effect. So, that was the product of negotiations between the governor, Democratic legislative leaders, and tenant, landlord, and business groups. And as Newsom signed the bill on Tuesday in Oakland, he couldn't help but take a jab at his favorite target, President Trump, referring to the president being in California recently and criticizing California's housing and homelessness crises.
We had a president of the United States come in here just a few days ago, like a seagull that comes in and does what seagulls do and fly away. If you haven't figured that out, just think about that for a second. But he wasn't wrong to highlight the issue, wasn't wrong to highlight a vulnerability. He's exploiting it. You're trying to solve it.
So the seagull joke there shows that we've had a wide range of not only responsibilities, but colors in this week in the descriptions. So.
Yes. And sure to continue both with PG&E and bills all the way up to, at least for the bills.
The deadline is
midnight Sunday. I can tell you how much I'm looking forward to working Sunday night.
And he hasn't vetoed a lot to this point.
About 5%.
Okay.
But in fairness, let's wait to evaluate his entire body of work. He still has 300 bills left. And a lot of times, with Jerry Brown, too, the veto pace would pick up in the final batches.
All right. Thank you, Ben.
You're welcome.
That's Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. You can find more state government news and, of course, continuing coverage of the power outages and topics related at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. We'll be right back.